The next issue is issue 8, which starts on paragraph 79. Income tax.
For class 4.
Frank has a solution.
Frank, yeah.
Both section 29 and IS 12 require that deferred income taxes are recognised using the temporary difference method. Of all the sections of the IFRS for SMEs, section 29 is the one where we hear the most feedback because it's too complex for SMEs. Yeah. Some people argue benefits of tax. Deferred tax information for users of financial statements is questionable. Some say many users do not understand the information provided. So the first question we'd like your feedback on is, should SMEs be recognising deferred taxes, and if so, how?
Suffer a lot about that actually in our country, and definitely my view is that this standard is not really applicable for SMEs. As I'm concerned, the difficulty of the estimates and the temporary differences and all the issues are really quite, even for the large entities, is so difficult. And now apply this to the SMEs, I honestly don't see the benefit out of that. So basically I would really recommend, I would use the 20% that recommending that, you know, we just delete these standards for the SMEs.
Okay. Frank?
The majority of, by far the majority of SMEs in the region in which I work don't understand deferred tax, and the people who lend the money don't understand deferred tax either in the main. And they often cross it out when they're assessing the business. So I would like the flow-through method, which is the conceptually sound method of providing for deferred tax, to be adopted.
I tried explaining this to my brother-in-law last night as a test. You know, he's a layperson. And his conclusion to me was, I can now see you're saying that deferred tax is a way of identifying the tax effects of current activities. Now, if you're telling me that you just want to, you know, whether or not it's crystallized as a CA or not, but if you're not telling me that you want the financial statements to only tell me what my taxes due are this year, then are you not misleading me in a way? Shouldn't I know that there may be some tax effects further down the line? And that's what the layperson said to me once I explained to him what it was all about. Mm-hmm. Because I am actually a taxes payable man. I feel that way because my clients don't understand per se. But when I explained this to my layperson brother-in-law yesterday, that's what I got back. So that led me to falling back to the undue cost or effort exemption. Mm-hmm. To the extent that if there are entities that feel that they do get value from incorporating deferred tax, then they should. For those who think it's a hassle, it's really not worth the while, they should have been able to opt out under the undue cost or effort exemption.
I believe the sort of the no deferred tax route potentially suitable for the S in the SME style of reporting. I think some form of, if I can call it, tax equalisation in terms of that for other entities, the larger ones applying the standard, would have made sense. Of course, what we need to do is get the IAS 12 requirements in there rather than the ED that it was based upon, and then look for potential simplifications where possible. It is the I'm thinking there is a need, but whether it's undue cost or effort or whether it's size, effectively is taking some sort of change out of it.
Yes, I mean, if we're talking about general purpose financial statements as defined in the standard, I don't see how you can do away with the deferred tax. And I'm not suggesting making it an option for the most sophisticated SMEs. I really think, and it's also a management issue. If you don't know your tax position, I think, you know, this is an issue. It's not a purely accounting, it's not to have nice, fancy financial statements. So I have pretty strong views on this one. I think, of course, deferred taxes, I mean, I know it's always difficult to explain to the layman, maybe a little bit of pedantism around the way we tend to present it, but I think it's a real issue, and I think governments offer tax reliefs, you know, so again, if we talk about general purpose financial statements, you know, those that are used in making economic decisions, I'd be a bit wary. I think it would be imprudent to do away with the concept of deferred taxes. And I think there's ways to make it simple. And I think from a management standpoint, it's kind of important to know that, you know, you've deducted the costs that you haven't recognized, or conversely, you have, you know, an opportunity later on to deduct certain costs from a tax standpoint that you already recognized through a provision.
Well, this is a repetition of an old discussion again in 2007. I remember that from the 11 ISB board members, five of them voted in favor of taxes payable only method, one too less. For the time being, I think I also agree with the taxes payable method, and for very pragmatic reasons. I think deferred taxes are a conceptual right, but I've seen the trouble that SMEs have with applying it. So we PwC, are in favor of taxes payable only, and we even wonder why this is a liability according to the framework. We've done some research on it, and if you look at the definition of liability, we even doubt whether a DTL is a liability according to the framework. Maybe that's a conceptual reason for taking out deferred taxes. So in this case, I support other people around the table.
I think this debate should be at the level of the jurisdiction. So let jurisdictions decide whether there should be an option to use the taxes payable method.
Yeah. And that would be, you'd think that should be applied then for the whole jurisdiction one way or the other?
Well, I was going to say jurisdictions then can decide which entities are permitted to use, permitted that option of the taxes payable method.
Does that not create something of a fruit salad in the end of companies all over, different size companies, different ways of applying it?
But we already have that under full IFRS, where there are different options available.
Not quite this
I know
extreme.
That argument was it.
Not quite this extreme.
But remember the justification. There's a cost-benefit justification for it.
Yep.
And we have other simplifications on the basis of cost-benefit considerations that have not met with such resistance. So what is it about this particular one?
Yeah, look, I'm no great fan of deferred tax. I'm not going to lie. In fact, I would extend some of the comments Frank made that many of the listed companies I know still don't understand deferred tax. And I don't say it cynically. I really believe that it's not something a lot of people understand. That being said, I don't think we're going to get away from it in an SME framework. As much as I'd like to, I think that, I think Steve made the point, there's a point at which some of the larger entities recognizing nothing representing that tax is probably going to be a bit of a hard sell, I would imagine, to the board. The comment I would then have is I think that, to me, the simple answer right now is that maybe it's just the jurisdiction I come from. We're used to IS 12. In South Africa, we've used IFRS for 10, 12 years now. Even the old, when originally IS 12 came out in 2000, we adopted it. And companies have managed to do it. You know, the complexity of deferred tax in small and medium businesses generally isn't that much. You know, they don't have the massive complexity that some of the other larger businesses do. They've managed to do it, whether well or not is debatable, but they have managed to do it, and I think that it is something we can put in. So I think barring getting a decision through the board where they would get rid of it, which I'm still not I'd be interested to see if it was debated. I think the second alternative to that then is an alignment with IS 12. I know we mentioned some potentially simplifying of it. I'm not convinced we can go through much simplification. I think when you take IS 12 as is and you apply it in an SME, and I'm talking kind of your standard SMEs, I don't think it's that complex. These guys don't generally have mass amounts of you know, non-tax deductible assets and BizComs, and you know, these are not very common transactions in these guys that generally give rise to some of the more complex things. You know, most of it, I mean 90% of it really is kind of the odd assessed loss and kind of revaluations of PP&E if we allow that. So it's not really something I think we're going to see people battling with horribly.
Just a question to Andrew. When you say that there should be a cost-benefit option, or maybe, introducing the cost-benefit, should that be done by the jurisdictions or by the companies? Or
Well, if you wanted to go even further, you could say cost-benefit, but I think at least it's easier, isn't... Sorry, if you want to go even further, you can say at the company level, but I think it's an easier argument to make and to get agreement to if you just leave it at the jurisdictional level.
But then we are introducing something new, aren't we? Saying that the jurisdictions should do the cost-benefit analysis, not the companies?
Yeah, but this is the position that I've been pushing from the very first issue.
So this would be an augmented IFRS.
Well, I was trying to avoid that.
Yeah, I know why you are both sitting here.
So then they were two.
I mean, but there's also, I mean, we mustn't forget again, when we look at deferred tax, it really, although my cousin-in-law pushed me off track a bit, but nevertheless, we're dealing with companies that are fundamentally entrepreneurial and for whom cash flows are important. Now, we mustn't lose sight of that. But also, my cousin-in-law challenged me on one point. He said, okay, fine, I do see the purpose of deferred tax, but does that mean that you're going to reduce the value of my financial position? And I said, well, yes, because that provision has been made. Mm-hmm. You know, goes. And he said, but then I'm not going to be too happy with that if I was an entrepreneur, because you're reducing my wiggle room, because that means that, you know, if I was to go to a finance for financing, you're telling them the resources I have available is less by that, when in fact I have room to play with that timing difference. I can use that the fact that I don't have to pay tax now, say we do deal with millions of my parents, with a million loans, for example. I can actually invest that, make enough money by the time the tax comes round to actually for the deferred tax to be an asset to me. So I don't want it to be deducted as a liability for my balance sheet. And I say, well, that's true. So from the perspective of the entrepreneur, deferred tax actually...
For precisely that reason, from the perspective of a banker, that sounds like really important information. Because in a year's time, you're not going to make a profit, but you're going to pay tax on it.
Well, who knows what's going to happen in a year's time? I don't think a deferred tax really tells you what's going to happen in the future.
It certainly, and I guess the problem is that it feels like the matching concept. And it, in the absence of us having invented anything new to replace it, we've left something that's based on an old concept but needs to be replaced with something. And I think perhaps the big concern here is that in the absence of the board doing anything, we need to be very, very comfortable from an IFRS face and ease perspective that we're happy to go out and do something different.
Yeah, so actually I support the timing differences approach, because I think that's much simpler. But generally, I don't think there's a lot of support for that. So the taxes payable is a compromise position.
I think the sentiments around the table is many agree that it's complex, and that's why we don't want it. That's one of the things. The next view, the second view, was that if you're producing general purpose financial statements, you should know the amount of taxes that you have postponed, which will arise next year. So if that second thought is there, why not give a disclosure? Because that information is required. So why not, you know, not require deferred tax to be a measurement concept, but the need to have that postponed taxes is anyway a bit of information that everybody wants to know, so you give a disclosure about what you have postponed.
I think the concern with that is that if we're asking people to give that disclosure, they've already had to jump through the complexity hoop, so we may as well then get them to put it on the face of the balance sheet. So that's the issue. Once you calculate it, you may as well use it. And I think I don't think anybody's arguing that the answer of having it on the balance sheet is certainly the most closely aligned to the IFRS picture at the moment. The question is just whether it's worth the complexity.
Well, I believe that deferred income tax must be applied in the for SMEs, but there are a problem that is the most rational issue into the standards, also in full IFRS, because it depends a lot of the taxation's law. And but in my opinion, there are a problem if we add the option to revaluation model and we omit the deferred tax because we will omit a big liability in some cases for in the balance sheet of the SMEs.
Yeah. Interesting hearing the comments. I understand the complexity with the deferred tax model and appreciate the need for some simplification, but ultimately it is a cash flow event. It can be postponed in many circumstances, but I do think that is a value to the users, and that it should be there as a result.
Anybody want to volunteer to sum this one up?
I'm concerned that, I mean, I hear the point on the cash flows, but again, I'm reading page 7 of the standard. It doesn't say that this standard is to inform users based on the cash flows of the reporting entities. It goes beyond. I feel a little bit of a disconnect between some of the assumptions we're taking and what is the fundamental underpinning for developing these standards. And I know that there's always a reluctance. I mean, deferred tax commands a lot of skepticism. It looks like a black box. It looks complicated. It's an accountant's invention to complicate things for entrepreneurs, so to speak. I think we should dispel. I mean, it would be a shame to fall to this myth. And I do think for proper planning, companies, CFOs, controllers ought to have a good grasp of what items they've deducted or they've added from their accounting earnings, if the logic is to start from the accounting earnings to determine the taxable position. It's not a bad management tool, and income tax is an important item that affects the bottom line. So for sure, probably, even from, I would say, an income tax, a cash flow standpoint, in terms of modelizing future cash flows, you want to have the right model, so... Anyway, I rest my case.
I think the difference, though, just to, and I don't disagree with anything you said, but I think the difference when we talk about the cash flow versus valuation, what we're talking about is establishing the value of a business as though I'm buying or selling shares, or establishing how much I'd be prepared to lend the business, how much I'm prepared to interact with the business, what is the potential ongoing ability of a business to survive. And those become the two almost perspectives, if you like, that you're looking at from it. But again, I don't disagree. There's a cash flow statement to understand cash flows. That's there. And also, and I do think it's a very, very important piece of information to Sanath's point. It's a very, very important piece of information just to leave off completely. Mm-hmm. The fact that I have earned the income that I'm going to pay tax on, and I've recognized it in my financial statements, I just simply haven't showed the payment of taxation. I think I'm a little bit lost as to the view of the room. I think we've probably supported all the options so far. if that's a fair statement. Is it worth a show of hands for who would support deferred tax as IAS 12 sets it out, but with some simplifications if we find that possible? Okay, I didn't understand this view of the room. Okay, that helps quite a lot then, I think. Tax payable method, just as an alternative. Mm-hmm.
depends on what's the next option going to be? And or was that it?
Change and no change.
Exactly.
Oh, well, taxes bit.
So when you say IS 12 with simplifications, is that consideration of any undue cost or effort?
Yeah.
Potential simplification. I mean, you've got options around issues such as whether it's through continuing use or sale. You know, you can. I mean, I think it warrants, if it's going to be revised from where it is at the moment, I think it's got to be opened out to see if there is sort of a way it potentially could become simple or simplified.
I think there's one for which is take IS 12 and simplify it for SMEs, as we have done on other sections, and then there's another way of thinking of it, being in IS 12, but have a simplification for undue cost of effort to use something like the taxes payable method.
So in other words, you could. Are we saying by simplification you could actually skip it if it's too much effort for the benefit
yeah.
you get?
Yeah, or are we saying sort of like SME apply it?
if you're going to simplify it, I think the time and differences approach conceptually is much, much easier for people than the temporary differences.
That's not really IS 12. I think we're getting out of IS 12, and I think it's a. I'll give you my view for what it's worth. I think I would take IS 12 as is currently, so including things like the investment property exemption. The assumption there, I would just take that and put it in. Well, as it is, I actually don't think that we can look at some of the complexities, but the reality is I don't think that IS 12 in its current form is really, really going to be that complex for people to apply.
With an undue cost of effort?
Well, I think you've got to be very, very careful with that, because I think the moment you put undue cost and effort in there, I guarantee to you you're not going to see deferred tax in a single set of SME accounts.
And that's the solution.
Yeah, I put good money on that. I mean, I know Frank's view, his clients will drop. I mean it. I really think that if you put undue cost and effort on this, you might as well just take it out of the standard. I mean that.
So you would say simplifications of text to the extent that we can get it?
Yeah, where we think things aren't relevant, that's it. Where we think things are relevant. Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't get away from. I wouldn't go to a timing difference. I'd leave the temporary difference approach. I think that those kind of fundamentals are there. And
so Hugo, you've been waiting to come in.
No, yeah, maybe I don't think it was in the agenda, but we had roundtable meetings in Europe the last year, and the discussion was also about how to simplify IS 12, and very often in the discussion it was about discounting deferred taxes. Mm. I don't think it's now in the discussion, but. We often, of course, it's possible to do deferred tax accounting, but not having the ability to discount is really a burden for most companies, most clients. But I realize it's not on the agenda for now.
Yep.
But
I would hope when we get to IS 12 from a board perspective, it's going to be perhaps a more comprehensive look at IS 12. Mm-hmm.
I think you would want to get the jurisdictional thing into that undue cost of effort. And also, I think there's also the other perspective that if you do say undue cost of effort, then the auditors would have a say as well as to whether or not really they think you properly applied it.
He's an auditor.
Are you? All I'm saying is I don't think...
Yeah, a high proportion of SMEs in our region aren't audited. But I do see the logic that you've got property, plant, and equipment. You're going to revalue it to exit value, even though you're never going to sell it. Mm. So you must provide the tax that you're never going to pay as well. Mm. I think that's the conclusion we've reached.
Fine. You should never say never.
Yeah. Okay, so you'd argue, Frank, that we would need the decision on option for revaluation of property, plant, and equipment to an extent drives this decision.
I think it does, yes.
Because it is misleading to state the full fair value of the...
If it's at exit value, then even though it's not going to be sold, which is what we're going to... If we allow that option, it's potentially not going to be sold, then yes, I think then that does create a deferred tax issue.
Okay, so to answer Michelle's question... We've got a couple in favour of undue cost and effort and a couple of not in favour of undue cost and effort.
The most majority were in favour of IS 12 with simplification. I was just would like to get some indication of how much of that majority are in favour of an undue cost of effort exemption and how many are
Okay. So assuming we go the route of IS 12, who would vote for undue cost and effort on top of it? It's a minority of the majority.